Episode 18, on how empathy transforms organizations with Maria Ross. Welcome to Brave by Design. I'm your host, Laura Khalil. I'm an entrepreneur, coach, and speaker. I love thinking big, exploring the power of personal development, and sharing the best strategies from thought leaders and pioneers in business to empower ambitious women and allies to bravely rise and thrive. Let's get started. Hey friends, welcome back to this episode. It's me, Laura. How y'all doing? Let me know. You know, we are going through a big global shift if you are listening to this in April 2020. And I'm thinking about all of you and sending love to everyone who is listening to the show. I know how really discombobulating and stressful this time can be. If you need, you know, some guidance and reassurance, I want you to check out our episode on the opportunity in crisis, which is came out, I don't know, a couple episodes ago. It is with Kathy Caprino. She gives some wonderful tools and advice there to help you through this time. I also want you to think about going and joining our Brave by Design Facebook group, where every Wednesday we do a live after show at noon Eastern of that week's episode. It's a great way to connect with us and just, you know, be in community with people. So if you're craving that community and you're craving a little more Laura in your life, and let's be honest, who isn't? Okay. go on over to Brave by Design on Facebook and join me. That's also where you can hear about a lot of the cool updates and news happening with programs and courses that I'm offering. Finally, I want to give a big thanks to you. For those of you who have left us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or written reviews, I want to tell you how much that has helped us. I nearly fell out of my chair this morning when I saw that we had hit 109 in the Apple Podcasts career section. Whoa, that is unbelievable for a show that is only 3 months old. We are rising quickly. So if you have not yet left us a review and you want to help us crack the top 100, please go over to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review. It would mean the world to me. It's one of the easiest things that you can do to support a creative person, me, who is running this show for you. I feel extremely dedicated to bringing you incredible content, even more so right now, and I could really use your support. And that's a great no-cost way to support the show if you want to see us continue to rise and reach more people who could use this advice. All right, let's dive into this episode with Maria Ross. Everyone, welcome to this episode of Brave by Design. I cannot wait for us to dig in with today's guest. Maria Ross is the founder of brand consultancy Red Slice. She believes cash flow, creativity, and compassion are not mutually exclusive. Maria has authored multiple books, including the one we are going to talk about today, The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success. She has spoken to audiences ranging from the New York Times to Blog Her, and has been featured in and written for numerous media outlets, including MSNBC, Entrepreneur, HuffPo, and Forbes. Maria, welcome to Brave by Design.
Dun, dun, dun. Thank you for having me. Wow. It's like when you present at a conference and they have rock music as you're coming up on stage. You're like, yeah.
You know what, Maria, when I can afford a sound engineer, that's what we'll do. Okay.
Totally.
We'll start to get some music playing. I'm so excited. First, because I read The Empathy Edge, and I was just, the stories that you infuse, the data that you back it up with, why this is such a good idea for businesses got me really excited. And what I would love for you to do is start us off with your firsthand experience of the power of empathy at work. I could not believe the story that you shared. Tell us about it.
Well, thank you, first of all, because I spent 3 years writing the book, and it was very important for me to share data and stories. And as an author, you never think you have enough, right? So thank you very much for those kind words. So I'm a brand strategist by day, and an author and a speaker, as you mentioned. But my first experience where it really hit home for me of how important empathy is you know, not just in marketing, it's very important in marketing, obviously, and branding, because you have to really understand your customer on right. on an intimate level. And that's the only way you can create connective marketing, create connective messages. Mm-hmm. HR folks that are doing employer branding know this too. How do you connect with recruits, for example? But my firsthand experience happened in 2008 when I almost died from a near fatal brain aneurysm rupture.
Oh my God.
And it was unexpected. I had just started my business. We had just moved to Seattle. I'm in the Bay Area now, but we had just moved to Seattle. We had bought our first house. We had gotten our first dog. It was a really stressful time. And I got hit with some symptoms. The doctor chalked it up to stress.
What were your symptoms?
I had a very, like literally within a second, I had the most severe migraine I've ever had in my life. Oh and my I got gosh. Nauseous and my neck and back muscles seized up. And I was one of the lucky ones because that actually wasn't the rupture. That was sort of, I guess, the leak. Oh so I had another month and a half of that before I actually had the actual rupture. But thank God my husband was home when I collapsed and got me to the hospital in time. And they discovered that I had this brain hemorrhage. So long story short, I spent 6 weeks in the hospital. And I was also blind for most of that time because the hemorrhage was so severe, it impacted my retinas. Oh so goodness. It was like pseudo blind. Like I could sort of see shapes, but not really see. So clearly when you're in the hospital, you're disoriented. You are, for me, I was lacking short-term memory at that time. So I don't even remember the first month I was in the hospital.
Wow.
Your dignity is stripped. You're wearing mm-hmm. like a, your butt's showing to the world.
Yep.
Like I couldn't move on my own. I couldn't. So all these things that sort of strip you of your dignity and your autonomy over making your own decisions, right? But we had a phenomenal experience at the hospital where I was in. It was University of Washington Medical Center, UW Medicine. And we had an amazing experience of just being treated with dignity and respect and all of these policies they had about like no visiting hours and no official visiting hours. You could come whenever you needed mm-hmm. somebody. You know, you could get to choose your own food from the room service menu, mm-hmm. you know, everyone addressed you by name. They told you exactly what they were doing to you before they were poking and prodding. And all of these things made it an amazing experience. And I became a patient advisor for the hospital after that to have input into that.
Wow.
And what I came to discover was that was not an accident, that was my experience. And it wasn't also just relying on hiring a bunch of really nice people and hoping that they do the right things, right?
Okay.
So this is where they were operationalizing empathy. They were subscribing to a global philosophy in healthcare called patient and family-centered care. And many hospital systems throughout the world have adopted these standards. And the standards require certain policies and things to be put into place so that a patient and their family has a better experience. So it got me down this road of like, oh, you can actually operationalize compassion. You can actually operationalize within an organization, making it really easy for employees to make good decisions, right? Mm. You didn't have to just, again, rely on them just being really nice people. And the fact that that creates ultimately a fantastic customer experience, if you want to think of a patient as a customer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first kind of opening of my eyes into like, oh, this is like a thing you can do. You can actually lead your company can lead this way. And hospitals were doing it not out of the goodness of their heart. You know, they were doing it to cut costs. They were doing it to increase profits, all the bottom line benefits.
That's maybe the most surprising thing is that we would think, oh, well, does that mean you're going to cut corners to, you know, to be quote unquote nice or to display empathy? But you're saying actually it's the opposite, that it is not only is the right thing to do, it's also good for business.
Oh, completely. And that's what the whole heart of the book is about, the empathy edge. It's about making the case. The data is out there. The research is out there. The stories are out there. And I just basically curated it into a book and said, you know, here's all the benefits that leading with empathy and adopting an empathetic mindset, and most importantly, putting that empathy into action with policies and habits and practices and procedures, it has been shown to increase innovation, increase collaboration, increase employee engagement. There's tons of studies cited in the book around employees will often work harder and for less pay, although that's not a theme we want to continue, for empathetic leaders and empathetic cultures. Mm-hmm. Empathetic cultures create more innovation. They have better relationships with their customers. There's more loyalty to leaders that exemplify empathy and show their people that, hey, I have your back, right? So there's this host of bottom line profit, engagement, talent attraction, talent retention, benefits to operating with this new paradigm of leadership and culture. And that is so exciting to see.
I love that. And to your point, it's not necessarily, you know, that we want to pay people less, but when we're looking, when a candidate is looking at a couple of jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, there's, let's say, a couple $1,000 difference between them, but another company seems that it's acting in this way. Mm-hmm. People don't just go for the most money. That's not how most people operate. They want to go somewhere that matches their values. And so sometimes that may mean, okay, yeah, I'm going to take a little bit of a pay cut, but this place is really going to give back to me in ways that feel meaningful.
Well, and when you increase that engagement and that loyalty, you get 37% less absenteeism, you get 60% less errors, you get 18% less, you know, lower productivity, and you increase profitability by 16%. So
there's
just some of the studies. Yeah, it's crazy. So engagement is important. And, you know, this whole idea of employee engagement has been sort of poo-pooed by C-level management for a really long time, and they're finally starting to wake up, which I know is really exciting for your audience. But I did want to mention, to your point, this idea of attracting the right talent could not be more important to an organization's survival right now. So because the incoming talent generations, millennials and Gen Z, there are studies out there that show that 71% of them want employers to feel like a second family, which I don't know about you, but that was not something I was looking for when I was trying to get my first job out of college, right? 60% of them are open to new job opportunities, which means that if they are not engaged at work, your top talent is leaving for your competitor. So they are, you know, for as much flack as millennials and Gen Z get in the workplace, they are changing the conversation of what they expect from a workplace culture. And good for them. That's what I say. Like, they're brave enough to ask the things we didn't. And they know, hey, I'm going to spend the bulk of my time here. I want this place to align to my values. And I spoke to a generational expert for the book who was very clear that companies that don't get this are going to die. Like, this is not a nice, it's not even a competitive advantage anymore. Like, this is table stakes for attracting the right talent. And if you can attract the top talent, your company can innovate and survive and lead the market.
You know, that's incredible, because as you and I know, our parents and what my parents told me was, hey, go get a good job, stay there for 40 years, you know, be happy you got that job. And what I'm hearing you say is, actually, it's a very different market, and people can move around, and people are going to look for what aligns with them.
Right. And that's why the engagement issue is so important, because of these younger incoming talent generations, one study showed that only 29% of them were engaged at work. So we talked all the benefits of engagement, right? And all the flip side of that is all the downsides if your people are not engaged. It is costing companies money.
Absolutely.
And so I love it. You know, I love that they're bravely forcing the conversation, because people say, like, why now? Why are we talking about this now? And why is this book so popular now? And it's because they are demanding that as a conversation, which I think is so exciting.
This is awesome. So first of all, thank you for sharing your story with us. And I just want to say, I'm so glad that you survived that. And
Me too.
and that you've actually used everything you've learned to help you along your path. I think that's so powerful. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you this question for people who don't know. What on earth is empathy?
So that is not a silly question, actually, because in the research I did for my book, it's, first of all, everyone has their own definition, right? Everyone I interviewed for the book had a slightly different definition. And if you look at the dictionary definition over time, for example, in the 1500s, sympathy meant something much more akin to empathy. Like, when people said they were being sympathetic, they actually meant empathy. So we're talking about a word that has sort of morphed and changed definitions. And that's what can get so confusing for people. It also gives people something to get hung up on so they can avoid the conversation. But for the purpose of the book, when I talk about empathy in the workplace, empathy is a mindset. It's about taking on another perspective so that you are seeing someone else's point of view. But more importantly, then, what you do with that information is you then take a compassionate action.
So what is a compassion then?
So compassion for me, and definitions that I found that really resonated for me in terms of the workplace, is compassion is the action, right? You can take a compassionate action without being empathetic. You can give someone food who's hungry, or you can give a homeless person a dollar. It doesn't mean you're being empathetic. It doesn't mean you're seeing the world from their point of view, but you can still take an action, right? So if we can, empathy, I see it as less of a feeling, because people say like, well, I don't feel empathetic. And it's like, well, empathy is more about a mindset that you adopt and a perspective that you take. And you use that to inform the action that you then take as a result. So that's why when you have empathetic leaders, when you have empathetic cultures, your employees feel seen, heard, and understood, because often the actions that those organizations or people are taking as a result of that lens tend to be more compassionate, tend to make people feel like they are being understood. Even if it's delivering news they don't want to hear, even if it's making decisions that are unpopular, you can still do so with empathy. One of my most empathetic bosses was someone who laid off the entire marketing team. It's how you go about it.
So it seems to me, what I hear you saying is that it is wise to have empathy combined with a compassionate action associated with it. Is that correct?
Yes. And I think you can act, I prefer to say act with compassion, just because, again, it might not be something you want. Like I was mentioning, the boss that laid off the entire marketing team, you know, but the way he did it was compassionate, because he was empathetic, because he adopted an empathetic mindset of like, what does my team need? How can I support them? You know, what must they be feeling? What must they be thinking? You know, sort of being proactive in getting ahead of what we might need in that particular situation. So he was acting with compassion. I wouldn't say that laying a team off is a compassionate act, right? But you see the nuance of that.
That is sort of like an important nuance.
Yeah, because you often have to deliver unpopular decisions as a leader or as an organization, or maybe, you know, it's a customer and there's really nothing you can do to help them, right? But the next steps you choose to take, if you adopt an empathetic mindset, can be better received.
You know,
you can leave a positive impression.
I love that. And I love that nuance. You give this example in the book, and I'd love for you to share it with our audience, of people who are doing one of the most thankless jobs on the planet. And that is being a debt collections agent and having to call people up. I mean, and can you tell us about what happened when those folks developed a sense of empathy and acted with compassion? Because I was shocked by what you wrote.
Yeah, I spoke with a woman named Christina Harbridge, who years ago started her own collection agency, because she'd had such a traumatic experience working for a collections agency about how awful these seemingly nice, wonderful people got on the phone when they were on the phone with these folks that owed money, right? Mm-hmm. They almost turned into different people. And it was traumatizing for her. So she, long story short, she ended up starting her own collection agency and saying, I'm going to do this differently. I am going to lead with empathy, because the first goal of the call was not to get the money on the first call. The first goal was to establish trust and get people to open up. So she employed a variety of tactics that I talk about in the book with her own collection agency, not just in terms of like how they treated the people they were calling, so the external part of it, but also what she did for those employees internally as a culture to make them feel seen, heard, understood, appreciated. And her collection success rates were 3 times the industry average.
Oh my gosh.
And they would get thank you notes from people that owed them money. They would get invited to weddings. She said, we had to put a toy box outside our office because people would bring their kids to meet their bill collector. She's like, I kid you not. And she ended up starting a consultancy to help other organizations sort of capture this magic. But she goes, you know, look, when I did this, I wasn't following any sort of leadership philosophy. I was just trying to do the right thing. And it turned out it was so profitable for her that this is why she's like, I have to tell other companies how they can how they can do this. So yeah, shocking, but incredible. Such a rewarding experience for both the people that they were had to collect money from and her employees.
That is absolutely incredible. That brings me to the thing I want to talk to you about next. Let's say I'm an organization. I'm interested in adopting more of an empathetic mindset that you talk about in the book. Where do I begin? What do I start looking for? How does a company get organized around this idea?
Well, I think there's two facets to that. One is that you as an individual can have impact no matter what, whether you're actually trying to turn your entire organization around or you're just within your own sphere of influence. If you individually can learn how to strengthen your own empathy muscle, you will collaborate better with your team. You will become a model of success within the organization that other people point to, and you will have a ripple effect. So that's one place, is sort of like wherever you are, you can start to strengthen your own empathy muscle and have an impact within your immediate sphere of influence. But number two, if you're looking at it sort of from a culture and an HR perspective of like, what can we do to actually adopt empathy as the watchword for our company? Mm-hmm. I think one of the best ways to start is that everyone really needs to be aligned on mission. And if that means that you have to create an exercise around everyone having input into understanding and clearly articulating why are we here every day? Because the success stories that I talk about in the book, the reason those brands are so successful and those organizations are so successful, one of the big reasons is because everyone is aligned on the same mission. So mm-hmm. everyone understands where each other is coming from and the context for the decisions that need to be made. They're not arbitrary. They're like, look, we're all after this common goal. We all agree on this common goal. So, you know, these companies that just like write up a mission statement that marketing spits out or HR spits right. out and it goes on the website and no one adopts it. No one had any input into it. No one even knows what it is. And mm-hmm. I've, you know, on my brand projects, that's one of the things I talk about is like, what is your mission is actually part of your brand strategy. Because if you're not all aligned about why you're here, then your customers are confused about why you're here
and what you seek to do.
And it rings hollow for sure. And so I think that's how you get the authentic, you know, again, going beyond just like a nice pretty poster on the wall. Like we're just going to say we're empathetic. Right. But when you're aligned on mission, now you can start to make decisions of like, okay, well, what are our policies, practices and habits that support that mission every day? And that's when you can start operationalizing empathy to say like, it's not enough for us to say we're an empathetic culture. Right. What are the things we're doing? What are the reward structures? What are the accountability structures? What is the hiring process? Are we embedding, looking at, rewarding and keeping people accountable to acting with empathy or, and whatever your company calls it, companies call it different things. Some companies choose to talk about it as service. Some choose to say humility. Some say empathy, but not all of them, but it's sort of like, what is the definition for your organization of mm-hmm. this behavior, any behavior you want to adopt, and how are you operationalizing it? And you can start small. You can start with like just one policy here or there, or just within the hiring process, or even just the language you use as a company. You can start to take a look at that in the culture and say, you know, is this language resonating for everybody? I had an example in the book of one consultant who was, she's an empathy consultant, and wow. she actually went in and helped this company. They just changed the name of, I believe it was frontline employees, which, you know, is a military term. Like those are the people that got shot at first, right?
Oh, good Lord.
to I forget, I think she called them like, they created another name for it so that those people all of a sudden they were feeling appreciated just because they changed the name of the position.
Wow.
So little things like that, that are cues to people that you don't really understand their world or you don't really understand what they're going through. You can just make these small changes. She calls them empathy tweaks, empathy nudges, right? You can make these small changes and have a really big impact. So there's lots of ways you can get at what sort of like, what's the first thing to do kind of question.
I love that. And you give so many examples in the book. And one of the examples that you gave that I think most people listening will remember of a company that did not walk its talk was United. And we talk a lot about, you know, companies and airlines caring for employees and caring for passenger safety. And I'm sure on some level they do. But then you give that great example that most of us remember of that absolutely horrifying video of a passenger being dragged off a plane, which you have to really say to yourself, well, how are you walking your talk in that moment? How empathetic is that to treat a human being with such little dignity in this scenario? I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a great example of, that's a policy decision, right? So again, I don't think those people got up that day wanting to like injure a passenger that day, right?
Right.
But in the moment, what was happening was they were enforcing a policy that the company had that put customers last. The policy was, you can kick paying passengers off an overbooked flight if a crew member or an employee is flying. So that's what I mean by, like, are you walking your talk? That shouldn't even be a policy if you say that your most important priority is the customer experience. This is, again, you know, where you create a situation where you put a person's human values at odds with their job. And we should never be in that position. And so that's what happened in that situation. Like, I'm sure those people aren't evil people. And it, you know, to be fair, it spiraled out of control and, you know, whatever. But that's because of the policy decision that company made. And so again, it's not about, we just need to, you know, United can't just go, well, we just need to hire nicer people.
Right. Exactly.
So,
I love that.
I think the sooner companies understand that, like, they can create an environment that makes it really easy for their employees to act with empathy, but they have to create that environment.
One thing you mention in the book is, you say a better way to act with empathy is to follow what has become known as the platinum rule. Tell us a little bit about the problem with the golden rule, and what that is, and what is the platinum rule?
I love this. And I, you know, I definitely can't take credit for it because it was in some of the research that I found, but we often think that, oh, the answer to this is just to treat people how they would like to be, treat people how we would like to be treated, right? Mm-hmm. That's the golden rule. But that's actually not empathetic, because then my only perspective is my own.
Right.
And it depends on what I want and what I would need and what I would desire. Empathy requires you to look at things from the other person's point of view. So the platinum rule is, do unto others as they would have done unto them. Because otherwise your only sample size is yourself.
And selfish is that?
It's totally, right? And what motivates me might not motivate you. And there's a great book I mention in my book called Drive by Daniel Pink, I think the subtitle is The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And the whole book is about, you've got to tailor incentives to an individual, because not everybody is incentivized by a raise or by, you know, they might want more time off. They might want a flexible work schedule. They might want, you know, interestingly enough, many of these flexible work policies, like work from home or paid family leave, are actually seen by employees as empathetic policies. They've actually said that those policies, I look at that and I say, oh, my employer's being empathetic to my needs. So these are things that companies can put into place to incent or reward people based on what they care about, not just blanketly like, oh, the only thing you care about is that we give you a raise or we give you a bonus or whatever. But if you're making my life miserable, like we talked about at the top of this, you know, I don't want to work for you anyway. Like, I don't care how much money you throw at me. I'm going to go somewhere else.
They're out.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you lose the engagement, right? And that's totally looking at it from a lens of like, well, this is what I would want. And so,
well, right, exactly.
That's how we're going to reward everybody.
And yeah, and you didn't mention the stat, but there is that global stat about 70% of the global workforce is disengaged, which is absolutely terrifying if you're running a business. So I want to ask you about something you call as sharpening your empathy edge. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm a lead, we talked a little bit earlier, if you're a leader or if you're an individual contributor, empathy can start with you. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to have to begin with a huge organizational shift. Mm-hmm. We can start as individuals. And what are a couple of those things that you would recommend as an individual? Okay, here's what I can walk into the office and do tomorrow to sharpen my empathy edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the number one habit, which is also the first one I list in that section, is practice presence. which sounds very woo-woo and people are like, I don't want to talk about mindfulness, but it makes sense. If you don't ground yourself and get rid of your own gunk in your head before you go into work, before you go into an important meeting, you have no room to take another person's perspective on because you're too worried about protecting your own skin, your own insecurities, your own fears, your own issues, your own anger, whatever. So even if it's 5 to 10 minutes a day of whatever that looks like for you, meditation, a jog, sipping your coffee without your phone or your laptop on, taking a walk, knitting, whatever you need to sort of get out of it and get into the moment of what's in front of you and think about, be able to create that space, that's what you need to do to practice empathy. It's putting your own oxygen mask on before helping others, right? The second one, yeah. And the second one is really about kind of the second and third are sort of flip sides. This idea of getting curious and asking questions. If you're in a situation with someone you're trying to collaborate with, or you're in a disagreement with someone, instead of the like, I'm going to go into this going, here's all the reasons I'm right and you're wrong. Get curious and ask questions. Why do you see things that way? What do you see as success? Well, how do you see this playing out? Why do you have that position? What's going on for you personally that's like coloring your decision-making right now, right? So getting curious, and number one, you get another person's defenses down, but also when you're curious and ask questions and you actively listen to the answers, which is one of the other ones, is to listen more and talk less, then you actually don't have to guess what the other person's point of view is. They're telling you. It sounds so simple, right?
Like we don't do it.
We don't do it. And I'm guilty of it too. Like people say like, oh, are you? And I'm like, well, empathy, I've done some strengths exercises and empathy is a strength of mine. I never would have told you that. But I also, like you also write books about things you need to learn about, right?
So absolutely.
I'm constantly working on this. And the thing about asking, I have to tell you, the thing about asking questions and getting curious, I have started adopting that. You know, whether you look at the political climate we're in or divisiveness about certain issues or whatever, if we would just get more curious and ask more questions about why people think or feel the way they feel, it has been a game changer for me.
I could not agree more fully with that statement. People are so quick to attack. And attack comes in different forms, but question your assumptions is what I hear you saying. Listen to respond, not to talk.
To react.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People just, they don't even listen. They just want to say something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, listen to what they're saying, respond to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And don't get so explosive or assume you understand, because most of the time we don't even hear clearly what people are saying to us.
Right.
As it's getting filtered through all of our perceptions, all our ideas, our prior memories and history and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Bria, this has been absolutely incredible. I loved having you on. I would love if you could share a couple takeaways for the audience, what they need to know next, and where they can find you and learn more about the Empathy Edge.
Yeah, I think the number one takeaway is that you can start small and you can start with you and you can impact change. It sounds really trite, but if you become successful in your organization by adopting an empathetic mindset, you become a model and people go, whoa, I can find success here that way. And you can start to create a ripple effect, whether it's within your team for better collaboration, or if you're an individual contributor, just people looking at you as a model of success and going, wow, how does she get things done? How is she so successful? So, you know, remembering that you can spark that change at an individual level. And I think the other takeaway too is to think about whatever your value is for your organization, whether it's empathy or compassion or humility or belonging or all the different flavors that are really empathy at their heart that companies say they value. What are some policies or practices at an operational level that you can put into place in your organization so that it makes it really easy for people to act in that way? You know, looking at just, again, not just crossing your fingers and hoping people make good decisions, but what can you do to reward it or hold accountability or recognize so that it starts to become part of the culture?
I love that. The book is called The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success. Maria Ross, where can we find the book and learn more about you?
Well, my hub is red-slice.com, so people can find me, my services, the book. They can contact me. I'm doing a lot of culture and leadership trainings for companies right now around this topic, which is just warms my heart because they're trying to influence the next generation of leaders. So people can contact me there. I'm on all the socials, Red Slice Maria at Instagram, Red Slice on Twitter. You can connect with me on LinkedIn and mention this podcast in your personalized note, because a personalized note on LinkedIn is much more empathetic. And so
ding, ding, ding.
I know exactly. Like, put it into practice right now. But yeah, I just, oh my God, we could do a whole episode on how unempathetic people are when they're soliciting you on LinkedIn, but that's for another episode.
Okay. We'll do it, Maria. We'll have you back for that one.
Okay. But yeah, I would love for people to connect and let me know what they think about this, how they're employing empathy within themselves or their companies. I'd love to hear all your stories.
And folks, if you are wondering, well, gosh, I don't know what policies, procedures, or habits to implement, pick up the book, get in touch with Maria, because there is some great information here for you. Maria, thank you so much for joining Brave by Design.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to thank you for joining me. And remember to subscribe through your favorite app so you can stay up to date. And I would love your review. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and comment on Apple Podcasts. You can also keep in touch with me online. You can find me on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Instagram at Force of Badassery. All that information will be available in the show notes. Until next time, stay brave.